Okay, good evening, everyone. Good Erev Shabbos. First of all, most importantly, I want to thank our sponsor this evening, Paul Balin, who's sponsoring in memory of his beloved mother, Ruth Balin, Chana Rachel Bas Eliyahu, on her 21st yahrzeit. Her neshama should have a continued aliyah. Paul, thank you so much for sponsoring. I'm sorry it wasn't chulin, but we worked out well. And as always, our learning is always an aliyah for the neshama of Esther Tila Bas Gabriel Pinchas. Okay, we have three very different, but I think three very beautiful ideas tonight. And as I saw last week, it worked well, so I'm going to try to cycle in one English with two Hebrew minimally, because I see that just changes it up for people as well. Okay, the first idea is from the Tolna Rebbe, Rav David of Tolna, in his Sefer Magen David, who has a beautiful idea. The Mishnah Maseches Negaim, of course, we're going to talk this week a lot about Mitzorah, a lot about Tazria. Mitzorah is all about Tzaras, and how you identify Tzaras, how you cleanse yourself from Tzaras, and it's very filled with a lot of minutia. But in there, the Mishnah Negaim tells us that Kol Negaim HaAdam Roa Chut Minigei Atzmo, that a person, namely a Kohen here, but they're able to look at all forms of Negaim, and as I could see the blemishes on you, I could see the blemishes on you, there's one person that the Kohen is unable to identify the blemishes, and that is for himself. So I can go to Stephen Plotzker's house. Stephen can say, there's Tzaras. I can look at the Tzaras and I can identify it. But if I have Tzaras on my own body, on my own skin, so I'm not allowed to do that. I have to go to a second Kohen, and the separate Kohen has to look at my blemishes. Says the Tolna Rebbe something so beautiful. He says, based on this idea, Adam ro'a kol negayim ve'yisurim ba'olam u'mehar achar midas adin. People very frequently look at all the problems in the world and all the issues in the world and all the plagues in the world. And you know what they say? They see all the problems. V'hu mibnei chutz minigei atzmo. But then they look at themselves and they themselves are perfect. They don't see how they even contribute to the problems in the world. Sheinu ro'a chov el atzmo lahargish shal yedei avonosav upgamav nishavu kol negayim shor ba'olam. A person doesn't say to themselves, you know what? There's something wrong in the world. What can I do to improve myself? They'll blame this party. They'll blame that party. They'll blame this side of the political spectrum. They'll blame that part of the club. They'll sit at their Shabbos table and they'll pontificate for hours about all the problems in the world. But at no point will they look in the mirror and say, what can I do to contribute to fixing these problems? He says, V'lazen, the next underline, Be'isa Ozorus, Dinim Chas V'Shalom Ba'olam, when there are issues in the world, which there are no shortage of in our day and age. Tzarech kol echad ve'echad lizbonin. Shekol ha'negayim shara avanosav. Hitu elu ve'him nigei atzmo. You have to look at the world and not be willing to blame everyone else, but rather you have to say to yourself, what do I contribute to that? Or what can I change? How can I help the situation? V'tzarech echad lashu betshuva shlema. Even if it's not your particular issue, you might be looking at a political issue, it might be a social issue, it might be an issue in Eretz Yisrael. But instead of complaining about other people, and instead of looking at the problems and blaming everyone else, seeing the nega, seeing the blemish in everyone else, first and foremost, you have to be willing to look inside. And so that's how he reads the Mishnah Negaim. Kol HaNegaim Adaram, a person sees all the blemishes in the world. Chut Menigei Atzmo. They're willing to blame everybody. Ah, it's the shul president. Ah, it's the board. Ah, it's this party. Ah, it's this segment of the community. Ah, it's this party in Israel. It's always everyone else's fault. But you know what you're never willing to see? Nigei atzmo. You're never willing to look at yourself. Says the Tolna Rebbe, the message of that is that before looking at all the rest of the problems in the world, you first have to look at yourself. There's a very famous quote which very much applies. Needless to say, the Tolna Rebbe does not quote this. But he says, when I was a young man, I wanted to change the world. I found it was difficult to change the world, so I tried to change my nation. When I found I couldn't change the nation, I began to focus on my town. I couldn't change my town, and as an older man, I tried to change my family. Now, as an old man, I realize that the only thing I can change is myself. And suddenly I realize that if long ago I had changed myself, I could have made an impact on my family. My family and I could have made an impact on our town. That impact could have changed the nation, and I could indeed have changed the world. So we always look at changing the world, and then we say, okay, I can't change the world, but at least let me change America. Let me change Israel. Let me change Boca Raton. But you don't realize that if you're willing to first start and change yourself, then by changing yourself, you're going to change your family. I could tell you stories and stories and stories of people based on one or two changes they made in their own life, how it impacted their family, not just for, you know, 1 or 2 years, but longitudinally, how it changed them in the long term. And when you change your family, what kind of an impact is that going to have on the community? When you change the community, so instead of looking at everyone else's problems and ignoring yours, first, says the Tolna Rebbe, you have to be willing to look on the inside. You have to be willing to look at nigei atzmo. You have to be willing to look at your own blemishes. And once you're willing to change, then you're going to share that with your family. You're going to change your family. Once your family's going to change, your neighbors are going to pay attention. And the people in shul are going to pay attention. And when they change, then it has a ripple and domino effect, and it's going to change the community. In Boca Raton, we're going to radiate to the rest of the world. But it all starts not by looking at everyone else's problems, but start by looking on the inside. What can I change? Okay, so there's issues going on in Eretz Yisrael, public debate in America. I can't change that off the bat, but you know what I maybe can change? Maybe I can change how I debate. Maybe I could change how I interact with other people. Maybe I can change the way I speak around my house. And that's going to communicate something to my children. So when they grow up and they become leaders in their community, they're going to speak a certain way and they're going to debate a certain way and they're going to engage in people who disagree politically in a different way. And all that started because I didn't just look at political parties and say, ah, it's this party, it's that party. But I looked at myself. I said, what can I do to contribute to a more civilized home? What can I do to contribute to a more civilized shul? How can I learn to debate agreeably instead of disagreeably with someone else? All of that is because I didn't look, as the Mishnah says, that kol ha-negayim adam roa, that a person usually sees all the problems in the world, chutz minigei atzmo, but he's never willing to say, what can I change about myself? Says the Tolna Rebbe, it's the exact opposite. It's first by willing to change ourselves, then we change our families, then we change our town, our community, our shul, and then we can have an impact on the broader community. I thought that was a very beautiful idea, and I love it because it requires us to take extreme ownership over ourselves. Instead of pointing the finger, instead of sitting at our Shabbos table and pontificating and lamenting and saying, oh, if only this, if only that, it requires us to look inside and say, what can I do to change it? And there's always something you can do. You might not change the world overnight, but you can change yourself, your family, which will change your community. And again, we can give examples of that, of people who made changes in their own lives and the ripple and domino effect that had in other people's lives as well. That is the idea of the Tolna Rav, the Magen David, a very beautiful idea. Yeah. Oh, I like that. I like that. Don't point the finger, pull the thumb. I like that a lot. Okay, that's exactly what he's saying. Okay, idea number two comes from the walls. I thought this was such a beautiful idea. It's a sefer I bought for my wife, actually, a number of years ago. It's called Lessons in Chinuch from the Parsha. And each week's Parsha, it goes through the Parsha, and it gives little tidbits of how you can be a better educator to your children or to your family, grandchildren. It doesn't matter. So he writes here the following in his third idea on Lessons of Chinuch. He writes, in this week's Parsha, Hashem speaks to the Jewish people of entering the Promised Land. And he says, when you come to the land of Canaan, which I am giving you as an inheritance. The pasuk is phrased in the positive tone of promise, something to look forward to. But that promised experience actually turns out to be very unpleasant, because the pasuk is going to tell us that if I will place an affliction of saras on the house of your land, so what happens? So what do you have to do to the house? If there's saras on the house, you have to tear down the walls. These psukim then go on to delineate how they would have to remove all of their belongings and destroy the walls of their new homes. Now Rashi tells us, very famously, that this is a positive thing. Why is it positive that they're going to take down the walls? Because Rashi says it's good news, because the previous inhabitants of the land, they hid all of their wealth inside the walls as the Jews were preparing for the conquest. And now that the Jewish people come in, they're going to find saras, they're going to tear down the walls, and lo and behold, behind the walls is going to be all this wealth. That's Rashi, how he understands the positive tone of tearing down the walls. Now, it's a good question on the pasuk, right? Rashi is answering a question. And the question is, how is it that tearing down the walls in Eretz Yisrael is going to be a good thing? The Torah portrays it as a positive thing. What about tearing down the walls of my house is positive? So Rashi has to figure something out. So Rashi says, oh, it's because of the silver and gold, the wealth that's hidden behind the walls, that while you tear down your walls, you're going to experience that wealth. But listen to what he says here in this beautiful book. He writes, the wealth in the walls holds an important lesson. Walls can be a blessing or a curse. I love this idea. On the one hand, the walls of Jewish homes protect the holiness being nurtured within them from outside alien influences by uniting the people inside in pursuit of a common holy goal. Our walls, both physically and proverbially, right, in a proverbial sense, our walls protect us. They're supposed to shield us from outside culture and from alien influences penetrating our home. So the Kedusha of my house says that the rest of the world might subscribe to a certain set of values, but in my house, when you walk through that door and you see the mezuzah on it, and it's caked with Jewish books and Jewish values, so there's a imagery of those walls being protective influence from the world around you. But he says, walls can also serve as an unnecessary barrier, arbitrarily separating people from each other. Right? Walls can protect me on the inside, but what do walls also do? They shield me from my neighbor. In that sense, it's a negative thing. Homes were smitten with tzaras as a result of lashon hara spoken within. Speech is a mechanism to unite people, to bind connections between them. When speech is corrupted into lashon hara, its innate purpose is corrupted, and it becomes a force for dissension between individuals. When I misuse speech, instead of it being a unifier, what is it? It's a divider. Therefore, listen to what he says. It's such a beautiful imagery. The metzora, or one whose home was afflicted, starts out by thinking, my way or the highway, and then proceeds to erect roadblocks, suspicion, uncooperativeness, defensiveness, finger-pointing, blaming, politicking, rivalry, sarcasm, prejudice, and lack of appreciation, all of which form the breeding ground for lashon hara. He who has misused the power of speech, turn the page. So this person who used the speech for all of those bad things then spends time outside of society, or the walls of his house must be torn down as he painfully learns the evils of separation. However, when the walls come down, so don't forget, we're tearing down the walls because we're showing him that he inappropriately separated himself from the rest of society. However, when the walls come down, the slanderer finds a treasure. Remember Rashi said, what was the treasure? The treasure was there was going to be gold and silver in the walls. He says, no, it's something so much more basic and I think so much more beautiful. When you tear down the walls, you find something that's a treasure. He learns to use his speech not to bring people down, but to build bridges instead of walls, to connect people, to appreciate the opinions and the approaches of others. And I thought that imagery of that the walls, as he said, can either be a treasure or walls can be a curse. Walls can be a blessing or a curse. If walls serve as a protective barrier to preserve the integrity and the kedusha of your own home, then a wall is a blessing. But if walls are erected as a divider, as something to divide you from the rest of the community, like the Baal Lashon Hara did, because when he spoke negatively about other people, he created that division, then walls are a curse. And when the walls become a curse, what do you have to do? Like Gorbachev, you have to tear down those walls. He learns to use his speech to build bridges instead of walls, to connect people, to appreciate the opinions of others and the approaches of others. The tightrope that Jewish homemakers make, must walk, is to find ways to keep the protective walls strong, that on the one hand, we need to protect and insulate our homes. There's so much negative on the outside world that we have to protect our families from, while simultaneously seeking ways to encourage others to enter. We have to have protective walls spiritually, but physically our walls need to be open. Our homes need to be open. Our homes need to be a place where we appreciate the opinions of others and the approaches of others. And we don't establish a barrier keeping people out and disagreeing with everybody else. That's the tightrope that he writes Jewish homemakers must walk. The ultimate example of this, he says, was none other than Abram and Sarah. They were able to maintain a home that was open on all four sides. Think about that imagery. There was no divisive walls. And yet, it was so spiritual on the inside that all who entered could see angels. That, he says, is the paradigm for our homes. That on the one hand, our homes are open and we welcome people. We welcome people even that disagree with. Think about who Avram was welcoming in, idolaters. We welcome in people that disagree with us, who have different approaches than us, who might see the world differently than us, who might be a part of a different political party than us. Our homes are open, and yet, at the same time, we are able to maintain a spiritual vigilance within our own homes, so much so that when people come in, they see that there's something different about our homes. He says, perhaps that is the blessing in Tsaras. Unlike Rashi, who said the blessing of Tsaras is that you're going to find gold and silver behind the walls. The lesson that the walls of a Jewish home are there to protect and unite, to encourage others to come in, to share, and to grow. When walls serve merely to separate, they must be torn down to expose the treasure that is this lesson, and then be rebuilt with that new wealth of understanding. I love that. The Baal Lashon Hara, the person with Tsaras, first you have to tear down the wall, and then you have to build it back up in a way that's healthy, productive, and contributes to the sanctity of your home. And then if you see on the bottom there, he has takeaways from each of his ideas. I just underline the takeaway from this idea. He says, walls can unite or walls can divide. We must first find ways to keep our protective walls strong while simultaneously seeking to encourage others to enter with us. That is the balance, the tightrope that he says that every single person who's in charge of a Jewish home must strike. That on the one hand, our walls are protective. They're strong. They insulate us from the outside world. There's so much that we have to block from entering into our homes. But on the other hand, we can't erect walls that are so strong and so firm that they create a division or divisiveness. But rather, are simultaneously, we have to seek ways to encourage other peoples to enter. That was the imagery, the beautiful imagery of the tent of Avram and Sarah. That on the one hand, it was open on all sides. Everyone felt welcome. And yet on the other hand, it was very protective. And it was vigilant in making sure who it allowed in and who it did not allow in. This reminds me of another idea that I've spoken to a lot in the past. It's one of my favorite ideas, Gary Chapman, Five Love Languages, where he writes about words, where he says words can either be bullets or words can be seeds. If you use your words properly, then it can be seeds. It can build something. It can grow people. It can build people up. But if you misuse your words, then they're like bullets. It could kill people down. It could crush someone if you use the wrong words. What he describes in terms of words, I think, is what this author is writing in terms of walls. That walls can either be the blessing, because it can protect us and it can insulate us in a healthy way. It could shield us from some of external influences. Or the walls of our homes can be the greatest curse. If it separates us, if we use it as a divider, then it is the ultimate curse. And therefore, what he says, that the lesson of the Tsaras is that the walls of a Jewish home are there to protect and unite, to encourage others to come in and to grow. When walls serve merely to separate, they must be torn down. That's what we do to the Tsaras. We tear down the walls to expose the treasure. What's the treasure? It's the moral lesson that the Baal Lashon Hara learns. And then what we do is we rebuild the walls in a healthy way where he understands that success is not when you speak Lashon Hara and you create divisiveness with people, but walls are there to protect you from outside influences and yet make your home a welcoming place. And that is how your walls are both a blessing and a curse. So we saw idea number one was from the Tolner Rebbe, the idea that you have to, what was it, finger outward, don't point the finger outward, the thumb inward, right? We have to do it. What was that? Don't point the finger, pull the thumb. I'll get it by the end, by the time I review it the third time. Okay? Don't point the... By the way, my wife's going to listen to this. She's going to cricket me a t-shirt. Don't point the finger, pull the thumb, and everyone's going to laugh. Okay, so that was idea number one. Kol negayim adam roa, chutz minigei achitzmo. We're really good at seeing everyone else's problems. We're not willing to look in the mirror and fix our own. Idea number two, I think, is just a very beautiful imagery of the walls. What's the treasure behind the walls? So Rashi says it's because when the previous owners left, they're going to leave treasures. We're going to knock down the walls. There are going to be magically treasures there. I don't know, every time I do construction, hasn't happened to me yet. Maybe I haven't knocked down the right wall yet, right? But he says here, there's a metaphoric wall that we're talking about. And those are the walls that we build that are healthy, and there are walls that we build that are unhealthy. Healthy walls are the walls that protect our home, recognize that the kedusha, the sanctity of my home, has to be different than what's spoken about in the street and what's spoken about in the news. We have a different set of values. We have a different set of morals that drive us, and we have to protect our homes, metaphorically and literally, from those outside values. That involves the types of shows we watch, the magazines we allow in our house, the book, everything. We have to protect the kedusha of our homes. And yet, at the same time, those walls cannot be unhealthy, where we're also blocking other people out, We've created so much separation and divisiveness from everyone else around us, and that is the imagery of Avram and Sarah. They were the ones who were ultimately able to showcase and model for us the most healthy form, where a house is open in terms of its being welcome, and yet it shields the house spiritually. Idea number three comes from the Oznaim LaTorah, Rav Zalman Saratzkin. This idea, I thought, was beautiful also. Of course, we know that a Kohen is the only one who can declare Tzaras. So I, as a joke, at the beginning of the Shiur, said, if I see Stephen Plotzker, I can't do it. I'm not any Kohenim here. No? Okay, who keep it? Alan Berger, right? Only Alan Berger can declare something Tzaras. I could be the most advanced doctor on the planet and have 15 degrees from the highest medical schools in the world. It ain't going to help me. Even if I know with 100% medical certainty that this is Tzaras, it's not going to matter. I need Alan Berger to come in, and only a Kohen looking at the blemish can declare it Tzaras. Within the context of that, the Medrash says the following. She Yisrael Taman Chacham, Roes Anegaim, Va'omer LaKohen. What happens if Alan is not so proficient? I shouldn't pick on Alan. I'll pick on Aaron Cohen, okay? Just a generic, that happens to be his Hebrew name, but Aaron Cohen, a generic Cohen, okay? So let's say, what was that?
You picked on me twice.
let's say Aaron Cohen is unfortunately not so learned. He doesn't have the medical background that I have, and he's not as big of a Talmud Chacham as I am. So he needs a little help. He needs a little coaching. So what we do, he and I have a little gig going on. I'm his wingman. He goes in to look at the Tzaras, but I'm with him, and I'm by his side, and I'm speaking into his earpiece, and I'm like, Aaron HaKohen, this looks like a Tzaras. So the Medrash says this actually was a case. She Yisrael Talmud Chacham, let's not use me, Rabbi Goldberg, Yisrael is a Talmud Chacham, Roa Es HaNegayim, he would see the blemish, and because he knows the intricacies of the Halacha, Omer LaKohen, he says to Aaron HaKohen, Afilu Hu Shota Gamor, even if the Kohen is a complete, how do you translate Shota? That's a very generous definition. How would you define a shote?
Imbecile.
Idiot. I think idiot would be like the least PC definition, but I think that's what we would call it, right? So an idiot or an imbecile or uneducated, whatever you want to call it. Omer tame vu tame. So I would say into the mouthpiece, Arna Cohen, this is tame. And Arna Cohen would say, oh, this is tame. Why? Because, as the Medrash says, he is a shote gamor. Okay? Ask Rav Zalman Saratzkin. I don't understand what a derogatory way to speak about Aaron HaKohen. What did he ever do wrong to you? Usually when we talk about someone who's unknowledgeable, what term do we use in the Gemara? Amaretz. Amaretz is usually the term that's described, and it's a much more parav term. Right? Amaretz just means like you don't know a lot. Shote, much more, is like a rougher term. Like you're not just, you don't know, but you're a fool. You're an idiot. I mean, that those are the words we would use. So ask for Zalman Saratzkin. Hine b'chol makom, korin l'misha lo kara, v'lo shana, v'eino baku edina Torah. Usually when we want to refer to someone who doesn't know a lot, we call them Am Haaret. V'lamu kara chachmeinu l'kohen hazeh, shote. Why in the Medrash then, does it call this Kohen, who doesn't know the halacha, why does it call him a much harsher term of a shote? And he says the following, and I think it's tremendous mussar for all of us. He says, "Venerally, it seems to me, shetir das haparnasa monas meharbe anashim es lima Torah. Usually, the reason why people can't learn Torah is because they have to go to work, and when they come home from work, they're too tired, and they're getting up for work so early, and that's the excuse. The excuse is that I don't have time. I'm too tired." V'chein amru zechazal, and he quotes a mechilta. V'akohen, but what about the kohen? Does the kohen work very hard? I ask you, the Kohen does not need to work necessarily. Where does the Kohen get his food from?
Us.
Right? Truma. Ve'akohen me'ochle truma. We give the Kohen food. Asher lachmu nason umeimav ne'emanim. They know that food's going to appear on their table. They don't have to go to work. They don't have to be in computers. They don't have to be ophthalmologists. They don't have to be OBGs. They don't have to be anything. They sit in the Beis HaMikdash, and they know that the truma is going to come to them. So what happens? V'yesh lo zman lidrosh b'torah selakim. They have the time to learn Torah. V'hu mevazvez esmano. But if he's a kohen who's a shote, what does that mean? That he had the time to learn, but he did not take advantage of it. Mevazvez esmano lehevavarik v'eino osik b'torah. He had the opportunity to learn, and he doesn't learn. Harehu shote. That, he says, is a shote. Ki hu me'aved ma shenasnu lo. Someone who loses a gift that someone else gives them is not just an am aretz, they're a fool. Right? If I gave you $100,000 and you dropped it in a sewage, I wouldn't call you an am aretz. I'd call you a fool. I'd call you a shote. Says the Rav Zayin LaTorah, that's what a kohen is. He's given a gift. The gift is because your food is taken care of, you can have the opportunity to learn. And he squanders that. He blows that opportunity. He misuses his time. Says the Oznayim LaTorah, someone who has the time to learn or the ability to learn and squanders that, they are a shote. Nasnu lo min hashamayim zman panu le'asok b'torah v'hu mevale oso b'dvarim shomah b'kach. He is wasting his time. Therefore, he says, that's why the Medrash uses the much harsher term. Am Haaretz is someone who doesn't know, no fault of his own. But if you could have known, and you blow the opportunity to know, then you are a shote. In and of itself, I think it's a very powerful idea from the Oznayim LaTorah. It's a reminder to us of how we spend our time, right? Thank God we live in a day of modern technology where there are many efficiencies that were almost unheard of 50, 60, 70 years ago. I remember a great story, I forgot exact who, I used it in a drusha once, but it was told of a very, I think it was, he was from Maryland, the neurosurgeon, who then became a political person. He like ran for president at one point.
The black guy.
The African American.
Dr. Carson.
Carson, yeah, it may have been him. It may have been him, I'm not sure. Yeah, we're politically correct here. Right, it may have been him. But I think he used the example that when they first got their washing machine and his mother realized that she had more time because of it, the first thing she looked at her children and she said, "New, we have an extra half hour. We're going to the library. We're going to learn how to read." In other words, like the fact that she now had an efficiency in her life didn't mean that they were going to watch more TV, didn't mean that she was going to play more video games. It meant, okay, we earned an extra half hour. The world, modern technology has given us efficiencies. What are we going to do with that time? All of us, despite our busy schedules, I think could look in the mirror and say to ourselves, I definitely have a little bit more time to learn. But then you could take the Oznayim LaTorah to the next level. Because I think there's two reasons why people don't learn necessarily. One is because he's right. We misuse our time or we don't have time. The other is because we don't have the ability. Right? The other reason is we just don't have the ability. Not everybody has the skill set. Not everyone has the background. Not everyone has the education. And to this I would say that Art Scroll is the greatest mechayiv ever created in the world. Art Scroll has robbed every single person on the planet of the excuse that I can't learn. It used to be that if you don't speak Aramaic, you couldn't learn. Then it was if you couldn't read Hebrew, you couldn't learn. Now, if you know how to read English, which is, I recognize, a dwindling population in America, but if you know how to read English, or French, or Spanish, or Hebrew, which or Russian, which basically covers the major languages in our shul, okay, you have no excuse not to learn. And so therefore, the Oznayim LaTorah comes along and says, if you have a good excuse and you're unable to learn, that's the amaretz. That's like the softer term. But if you were able to learn, either because you had the time, or because modern technology and modern innovations and modern translations have given you the ability to learn. You can learn Chumash and Rashi, you can learn Ramban, you can learn Gemara, even Tosos, which I think is like the bellwether of the hardest thing to learn. What's Art Scroll doing right now? It's going Masechta, Masechta. In a few years, you'll have all of Tosos translated for you as well. Art Scroll is literally robbing us of excuses from learning. There is no excuse not to be able to open a Gemara anymore. Because Art Scroll robbed us of it. There's no excuse to not be able to make it through Chumash and Rashi. Now, I'm not telling you to do everything, but pick your points. But the point is, every single one of us can be pushing ourselves in Talmud Torah. Both because, I think, our modern lifestyle, generally, by and large, allows us a few minutes a day to be able to learn. And because we all have the ability to do it. Every single one of us can open an Art Scroll. Every one of us can open a Steinzels. Every one of us can open a Sepharia. The amount of translation, and by the way, sometimes if I'm reading like a modern Hebrew Sefer and the intricacies of the Hebrew, I got news for you. If you put your phone up to that page and scan it in Google Translate, it will translate it for you. It's not always perfect, but it's enough to help you get through some of the harder parts of a modern Hebrew translation. There are answers for everything. You're an auditory learner? Okay, we can figure that out. You're a visual learner? We could figure that out. I know someone who's dyslexic, has trouble reading inside. Audio learning Shirim has changed his life. He's like, I was never able to learn because they would always ask me to read in school, and I stunk at reading in school. And so but he's like, now that I can listen to Shirim, he's going through a lot, Masechtas and Shirim, and learning a lot because, again, the internet has given him the ability to go back to yeshiva. Just instead of having to read the Gemara inside, he's able to listen first and then go inside the Gemara, and it's changed his entire life. I happen to not be an auditorial learner. I'm a very visual learner. Okay, so thank God we have more books and more access to Sfarim than we've ever had in literally the history of the world. Literally the history of the world. And so I think that's what the Aznayim LaTorah is really driving us towards. It's reminding us that if we have the ability to learn, either because of time or because now with ArtScroll and other things, we have access to that, and we don't take that opportunity, then it's like someone handing you $100,000 and you're dropping it in the gutter. You're squandering it. You're wasting it. You're throwing it away. We don't have to conquer Kol HaTorah Kula in one night. But every single one of us can push ourselves just a little bit more in Talmud Torah. So idea number one that we saw was from the Tolna Rebbe, that it's finger... Don't point the finger, pull the thumb. Stop looking at everyone else's problems and start looking at what you can contribute to change. Idea number two is a beautiful idea from the Sefer on Lessons of Chinuch, that the walls are a blessing and a curse. Walls are a blessing when they protect us and insulate us in the holiness of our homes, and they shield us from external negative influences. But walls are a curse when they bring barriers and erect roadblocks because of blaming and sarcasm and rivalry and prejudice and finger-pointing. All of that is what erects barriers between you and your neighbors. And therefore, he says, we have to model ourselves after Avram and Sarah, who had an open tent, and yet were able to maintain the Kedusha inside of it. Idea number three was the Aznayim LaTorah. Why is it that the Kohen, who doesn't know Halacha, is called a Shoteh? Wouldn't it have made more sense to call him an Am Haaretz? Says the Aznayim LaTorah, no. Am Haaretz if it's no fault of your own. But if you could have learned and you didn't, then you squander that, that makes you a Shoteh. And I think that is a point of reflection on each one of us of, are we taking advantage of, thank God, a lifestyle that by and large allows us a little bit more free time, by and large allows us access to Torah and to Torah knowledge. And the question is therefore to look in the mirror and say, am I doing my part to learn Torah a little bit more each and every day? With that, I wish everyone a good Shabbos.